a story called The Kid Who Kicked Ken Kesey's Keister by Boone. I had heard stories about Cipolite for years, always in bars, like the Half King in Chelsea. I used to go in there occasionally. Some guy brought it up one night and wouldn't shut up about it until I pretended I saw someone I knew and moved to the end of the bar. He said it was a place where old hippies moved before they died. I thought this was bogus, so I said I thought old hippies moved to Portland. He said it didn't matter. There weren't that many left anyway. I had to agree with that. And then he said Cipolite meant Beach of the Dead in Aztec, or maybe Mayan. He couldn't remember, but what he did remember was German girls went there and took their tops off on the beach. I said I'd been to Mexico and doubted that because the federales would snatch them up. He said only at Cipolite and offered to buy me a beer. I said make it a Guinness. He said a man could live there for 15 to 20 bucks a day. Maybe less. I drank my beer and listened until I got bored, then I moved down the bar. The next time it came up, I was in a bar in L.A. Actually, Van Nuys, but you never tell anyone you've been to Van Nuys, and if you happen to live there, you tell everyone you live in Sherman Oaks. It was St. Paddy's Day, and Brett and I started at Molly Malone's at 11 a.m., and finally ended up at Ireland's 32 on Burbank and Woodman. It was late, and I was drunk, and all of a sudden, this guy next to me started talking about this beach in Mexico where you could live like a king for next to nothing. I said, "Are you talking to me?" And he just kept on talking. Cipolite, Cipolite, Beach of the Dead. Dead hippies, dying the surf. He wouldn't stop talking about it. So I said, "Listen, if you don't shut up, I'm going to punch you in your fucking face." His eyes focused on me, and he seemed to sober up a bit, fluffed himself up, and said, "If you feel froggy." And I did. So I knocked him out with one punch. He bounced off the wall behind him and flopped on the bar, his head resting on his forearms. Brett said, "Shit, man, let's get out of here." I looked around. The place was packed, but no one seemed to have noticed. "Why?" I said, and the bartender came up and put a Guinness on the bar and said it came from a young woman near the middle of the bar. And I looked. She gave me a wave. I waved back and smiled. And the bartender said, "Listen, get your buddy out of here. He can't sleep on the bar." I said, "Okay." I ended up ditching Brett and going home with the girl. The guy woke up, didn't say another word. But this place was in my brain now. Every time I would meet someone who said they just got back from Mexico, I would ask about Cipolite, and they would say, "Never heard of it." Then, after a few years, I kind of forgot about it. And after going through a few meaningless jobs and two ridiculously short marriages, I found myself in a bar in Cincinnati. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, me at one end and two guys down at the other end. I was waiting for my beer and feeling sorry for myself because it was December 18th and I didn't have anyone to spend Christmas with. The bartender put the beer in front of me and said, "Oh, you're that writer guy." I said, "I wrote a book. Two books, actually." He said, "Congratulations." And I said, "Huh?" And he said, "Hang on," and walked away. He came back, big smile, saying, "You're one lucky dog," and dropped an envelope on the bar. "You won the drawing." I stared at the envelope. It was odd shape, bigger than letter size. "What drawing?" "Take a look. Mexico, baby." Inside was a congratulatory letter and two plane tickets and a week's all-inclusive paid trip to Dreams Huatulco Resort and Spa. Compliments of Apple Vacations. "I won this?" "Picked your name out of the fishbowl." "Huh? I don't remember putting my name in." "I don't want it." "You want it?" "Are you crazy? You know what that's worth?" "No." "Well, I don't either, but hell, I can't go. I've got a wife and a kid and no vacation time. Sell it if you don't want it. I looked at the bottom of the letter where it said non-transferable and put everything back in the envelope. SportsCenter was on TV. I finished my beer and walked out. Sometimes I don't think at all. And others, I'm given to long periods of introspection. That's when I do my writing. I'll go years without writing a word, then I'll start messing with a pen and a book comes out. I call myself a writer, but I'm not. I'm a muser. Most of my musings don't make it onto paper. Luckily, other people seem to like it, so I've made enough money to live for a while. I never got around to learning much about the craft of writing. A few courses I took actually made me dislike it. Some geek made us create outlines and didn't understand it when I told him I don't need one because I already knew the story since I'd been thinking about it for however long. Another geek told me if I didn't write so many pages a day, I wasn't really a writer and would never be successful. Well, I agreed with him and he gave me a D. Didn't matter to me because I learned in those classes that I was not a writer. Not like the guys I admired most, Cormac McCarthy, William Kennedy, Robert Stone. And of course, I read every word of the works of Hemingway, Fitzgerald, and John Dos Passos, especially Dos Passos. I was in awe of the USA trilogy and knew I could never compete with that. None of those guys. Who could? So why try? But then I start to have thoughts and finally, those thoughts make their way onto paper and then the computer. Too bad Hemingway lacked the technology to create a backup of the novel he lost in France. Too bad. How great might that book have been? When I was a kid, I thought Hemingway's absolute best. His themes of honor, bravery, manhood all seemed to make sense to me, so I read it all. And then I began to look at the biographies of Hemingway. Soon I began comparing what the man wrote with how the man lived. And the man came up short of the written word, left a shadow on my literary soul. I left home when I was 17, not because I had to, no hardships, no broken home, just because I had to. I just wanted to get out and see all the worlds I had read about. I wanted to see Richard Halliburton's world. I wanted to see Kerouac's road. Most of all, I wanted experience. I hitched to Mexico at 18 with $15 and immersed myself in the culture, learned Spanish. There a woman taught me about sex. I went to Quebec and worked in a restaurant, learned French. There a woman taught me about love. Everywhere I went, life was wonderful. People were beautiful. Then I upheld a promise to come back to the States and go to college. And then a job. Okay. And then a marriage. Okay. Didn't work out. Maybe I didn't try. Strike that. Maybe I didn't try. Then a second marriage where I tried, she didn't. Total time being married, 6 years, 44 days. Couple of jobs, couple of novels, and where'd that leave me? Standing on a beautiful beach in Mexico with the Dreams Huatulco Resort a few hundred yards behind me. Alone, December 23rd, feeling lonely and lost. Standing barefoot in the surf, the cool Pacific waters caressing my feet and ankles. With each recession of the waves, I sank a little deeper into the sand. I wondered if I stood there long enough, if the beach would swallow me up. Then I wondered if that would be so bad. What if I walked into the surf and walked until I couldn't walk any longer, and then started to swim until my arms gave out, and then rest. Float on my face for a moment, brine in my mouth, swim some more. Get a second wind, swim further, never look back. Swim until my body would no longer move, then sink. Would I have regrets? Would I struggle to live or simply give in? Parents dead, no kids, no one would care. No one would miss me, except for the two novels, which would fade in interest over time. It would be like I was never on Earth. In the midst of feeling sorry for myself, I felt a presence behind me, a young couple walking. I turned slightly to get a glimpse and overheard the young man say, "Well, we could always swing over to Sipolite." I wasn't sure I heard him correctly, and they kept walking away from me, and it took a moment for it all to register. The name I hadn't thought of for years, and now just casually thrown out and blown away by the wind. Maybe I misheard. The couple turned from the beach and headed for the hotel. I struck an angle of pursuit to hopefully catch up with them by the time they reached the patio. They beat me to it, so I had to raise my voice to get their attention. "Excuse me, I'm sorry." They heard me and stopped and turned. "I'm really sorry. I'm not sure, but did I hear you say something about Sipolite?" "Yeah, it's about 20 or 30 miles west of here. Have you been there?" "No." "Yeah, it's on the other side of Puerto Ana. My dad told me about it. Says he was there for a week back in the 80s. Says it's a really cool place." "That's what I heard too. So, Sipolite? About 30 miles that way?" "Más o menos, as they say." The cabbie pulled off the road and pointed down what looked like an alley. Dirt road with plants and trees thick on both sides. "This is it?" I asked. The driver jabbed two fingers straight down the road, then made a sweeping move like I was to turn left. He said something in Spanish, and I was a little skeptical, so I said, "Sipolite?" And he insisted, "Si, Sipolite, si." I gave him $30 American, and he took off and left me standing there feeling like I'd just been played. I walked about 100 yards and thought I could hear waves breaking on the shore, and then I was pretty sure I could see the ocean, and then the whole thing opened up as I turned left on another road, and yes, it was beautiful. I walked between some rough wooden buildings and onto the sand. I took off my sandals and went to the water's edge. Beach of the Dead, huh? I didn't see any bodies. A sound called my attention behind and to my right, where I noticed two young women on towels as they stripped off their tops. No bras. Two local lusties swooped in like crows and after some brief chat, took money from the girls and raced off. Place as promised, I thought, and looked at the scene. Maybe a mile or more of rustic palapa huts mixed in with more upscale hotels and restaurants. Interesting combination. I walked the beach until I decided it was time for a beer and headed away from the water to an area where I saw a few rough tables and some chairs. The bar was makeshift with bamboo posts and a thatched palm roof. It sat on the sand but seemed semi-attached to a larger concrete structure. A little freaky-looking dude stood behind a bar made of 2x8s. Several glass door refrigerators displayed different brands of beer. Mostly Mexican, but some Budweiser and Heineken here and there. The hard stuff was behind him. As I approached, he looked up with a broad, engaging smile and said, "Welcome, welcome." Then said, "Do you have money?" I've never been asked that by a shopkeeper, so I took a hesitant beat before saying a drawn-out, "Yeah." And he said, "Well then, 1,000 welcomes. Step up and I'll serve your favorite draft, and I don't mean beer from a keg, 'cause we got none of that. I mean a medicinal liquid." I looked at the selection of beers and asked, "A lot of guys come in here with no money?" "Oh, my friend, you would not believe. They jump around in the waves and come up here and want a beer because they left all their money in their hotel, and could I trust them? Nah, baby, nah." I told him I'd have a Carta Blanca and looked around at the decor, a mixture of seashells and bric-a-brac and Mexican oddities and strings of lights that must make this warm and inviting at night. I felt comfortable and relaxed on one of the mismatched stools. I asked if this was his place, and he said, no. It was run by a Hungarian guy named Erno, and he worked there and got paid in drinks. But, he said, I'm not sure who makes out on this deal, because every now and then I'll get completely wasted. I heard a feminine squeal and looked past a bamboo divider to another area where an old man seemed to be entertaining three Mexican girls. He held a bottle of perfume in both hands and attempted to spray one of the girls, while two of them battled to wrest it away and all shrieked loudly. What's this? I asked. Fucking freak show, he replied and held out his hand and said, name's Ralph. I shook it and told him my name, and he shouted past me, aye, keep it down. And the old man bellowed, fuck you, Alky. Ralph said, gotta let him drink. He runs a big tab, but always pays it without questioning the amount, even tips on occasion. He asked if I wanted another beer, and I said, sure, and asked if he'd join me. He said, tell you what, let's have two on old Erno, and served me a Carta Blanca and himself a Budweiser. He asked me what I did for money, and I told him, and he said, really? And explained he had a story that would make a perfect novel, and I should write it. I smiled and took a long drink, and he said, I guess you've heard that one before. I nodded and said, yep. Pointed his beer bottle toward the old man and said, now, old street over there, believe it or not, he's the Magilla. I turned to look, and the table had become raucous again, and I heard one of the Mexican girls loudly say, no! You no boss now. No be man in bed, no boss. That's Max Street? I asked Ralph. That's the guy who wrote Like Dogs in the Rain? The one and only. No shit, I muttered, a little crestfallen, because after Dogs in the Rain, I was compelled to read all his books, and I was jealous of his talent, and I admired it. So, to see this rundown old man... At this, the man approached the bar and said, my good man, Ralph, these harpies seem to think I owe them another round. Since I wagered last night, I had fucked all of them and only made it through two. He brought his voice down on the last sentence, but they heard him, and one shrieked out, you didn't no fuck none of us, and they all laughed. Lying whores! But anyway... I'm a man of honor, so give them tequila. Then he raised his voice and said, and then they will be on their way. We go when Mauricio come. You go when I say. He extended his hand to me and said, name Street. I know, I admire your work. Ralph returned from delivering the shots, and behind him one girl shouted, Mas tequila, papa! And another shouted, Musica! Ralph pushed a button on the sound system, and a reggae beat washed over us, and he said to Street, this guy here's a writer, too. Oh, really? Have I read you? I doubt that very much. Probably right, because I don't read. Might come across some guy better than me. Now, I will occasionally break out a Dickens or a Conrad, like a fine wine, you know, satisfies. Read a chapter or two, makes you appreciate life. Give me one of those beers, Rafe, you alky. Which one? The one that has beer in the bottle. Ralph reached for a Budweiser and Street protested, Oh, Lord, not that. Well, you said, I know what I said, just give me what he's having. Give him another one and put it on my tab and treat yourself, but don't you dare put that on my bill because I know you steal from Erno. It's not stealing. We have an arrangement. He ignored Ralph and focused on me. What do you know about writing, anyway? I said, more and more, I discover I know very little. Wise. I feel the same way. Writing's a younger man's trade. I used to feel it. It surged inside me. Now, I haven't written a word in years. Don't have to. I think about all the stories I have in me. I just don't have the will, the drive. That's too bad. Do you think so? Do you think the world's worse off for lack of another street? I don't know. I took a drink and looked at him. How old would he be? Guessing 60? Older? I waited for him to reply, or Ralph, but they didn't. So I said, "Your books sell. People enjoy them." "The last two?" he asked. I said, trying to think of their titles, and he continued, "Didn't sell shit. Publisher dropped me. Pretty soon my agents dropped me. I'm done. Dead in the water." You're looking at a dead man. That animated Ralph to say, tell him why you came down here. "Maybe later." And to me he said, "So you fancy yourself a writer? Well, you haven't asked me for any advice, but here it is anyway. Just tell your story. Writers write. We can't help it. Same as 10, 20,000 years ago, we would have stood before the fire and told of the hunt. Or a story about the god. Whatever, hasn't changed. Tell your story. Make it yours. If you have a unique voice, people will listen. If I read your book, I want your story. If I want Rafe's story, I'll read his book. Get it? Tell your story. That's all there is to it. A lot of people think writing is easy. They think they have a story, but they don't. If they did, then everyone would write a book. They don't. They're just people. "Okay," Ralph began. "Then tell him about Ken Kesey." Ralph looked at me and said, "He's the kid." "The kid?" "He's the kid who kicked Ken Kesey's keister. Ask him. I've heard this story about 2 million times." I laughed lightly and looked at Street, but he turned away to the girls who were calling out for more tequila and roared, "Whores!" at them. "Tell him," Ralph urged. "He doesn't care about an old man's musings." "Yeah, I'd like to hear. You got in a fight with Kesey?" "It was 1978, Palo Alto. I was attending Stanford on a Webster Fiction Scholarship, and there was this party at a cove on the beach, and in comes Kesey with about 10 other people, and the whole world stops. And this young thing I was chatting up drops me like I'm a leper, and it's all, 'Oh, Kenny, oh, Kenny,' made me sick. Then I heard this girl squealing, 'Mauricio, Mauricio,' and the old man looked over his shoulder and said, 'Fuck,' and then turned back to me and said, 'So anyway, Mauricio, a tall mestizo Mexican wearing a lot of gold chains visible through his open shirt, ducked his head under the palm thatch and entered the palapa. Ralph, where that bastard? I don't know. Don't know, Mauricio. Lo necesito. I'm serious. I haven't seen him in 2 days. A couple came in from Holland yesterday and I told them to go ahead, pick a bunk. I have no idea what price he quoted them. I don't know shit around here. Give me a Dos Equis and lime. Make it fresh. How I am supposed to run a business? Everybody owe Mauricio. They think my name Maurice. E-O. You," he said to Street, "you owe me money." "I don't think so." "You don't think so? Why?" "I didn't fuck them. Ask them." "Why no fuck? They're terrible. Look at them." "Don't matter. You take them off the street, you pay for time. I don't care what you do to them." The girls called out to Mauricio for tequila, and he shouted for them to shut up. "You're la camioneta." And to Street, he said, "When I come back, you pay me. 300 American. Street shrugged his shoulders and turned his palms up and stared out at the sea. Mauricio took his beer without paying and left. Street stared down at the bar. Ralph said, "Go ahead. Finish the story. Kesey breezes in. Time to pay the fab old piper, Ralph. What do I owe you? You just called me Ralph. It's your name, ain't it? Kella Dommage. Ralph took a pad from under the bar and finally said, $120. Tell him how Kesey wouldn't shut up and was trying to give all the girls drugs, but wouldn't give you any. Street fished around in his pocket for money, but couldn't find any. Hell, to hear him tell it, Kesey got fucked up and was picking on Street's friend, and then it was on, and it was the battle of the century. Went on for hours, right, Max? Isn't that what you told those Norwegians a couple of weeks ago? Norwegians can't fight, and they're gullible as hell. Anyway, many great blows were struck, and Kesey tried to put his wrestling moves on old Max, but Max was too cagey and wouldn't let him take him to the ground. Right, Max? Street finally found two crumpled $100 bills and spread them on the bar. Right, Max? He cut your lip, took four stitches later, and you bloodied his whole face till he went down on his knees, and you were about to hit him with a Superman punch, and two guys grabbed you and pulled you off. Right? Something like that story seems to change from time to time. Here, he motioned to the bills. This covers my debt, and you keep the rest. Really? Well, thank you. You're a good man, Ralph. Forget about the Kesey story. He was an old man. I was 27 in my prime. It was really nothing. Bullshit story. He walked away and out to the beach. The sun was drooping toward a hazy horizon. The hammering surf was so loud we had to raise our voices to be heard. Tide's coming in, Ralph said, and flipped a few switches that illuminated the inside of the hut. Keep an eye on him, hey? Yeah? Why's that? Well, I don't know. He has so many bullshit stories. Ralph tried to make change of Street's money in order to get his proper tip, but there wasn't enough money in the cigar box, which served as a cash register, so he simply pocketed one of the bills and put the other in the box. When he first came here, he told me, he came here to the beach of the dead to die. To die? To die. And then he really hasn't talked much about it since. I brought it up a couple of weeks ago, and he just shrugged and smiled. But he's different now. The last few days, different. I drank the last of my beer and swiveled a bit to get a look at Street standing in the same place, staring out. This guy had such a life, I thought. Books. Books turned into movies. Married an actress. Then a rich society widow. Finally, when he was in his 50s, a college lit major he met at Starbucks. Houses on a small mountain in Maine, on the beach in Malibu. A couple of kids who were worthless druggies, but the books. They were good. I read once that Dream Girl was a love letter to his first wife, his high school sweetheart, and I read that she refused to read it. Conjecture was this hurt him. The reporter said none of his wives would admit to reading him. His fiction is so superior to mine. People teach his books. Mine get remaindered. He has so much to live for, and he doesn't see it. Maybe I don't either. I ran this through and thought, maybe I should stop feeling sorry for myself. Maybe I should take one of my story ideas and begin to develop it. Maybe I could be better. Maybe I'm too much like him. I thought this through, and then Mauricio came back. Where he go, Ralph? Ralph nodded toward the beach. Hey, old man, Mauricio called out and headed toward Street. You pay me now. He reached Street, grabbed his shoulder, and turned him, and as he did so, Street swung around with the momentum and hit Mauricio hard on the temple. Mauricio dropped to the sand. Then Mauricio got up and proceeded to take Max Street apart. It was no contest, and by the time Ralph and I could reach them, Street was a mess. Blood dripped off his beard onto his dirty white cotton shirt. He knelt on one knee, his left hand in the dark, wet sand. The blood dripped and was taken away by the cold, frothy sea. The sun was a small orange dot in a mauve mass of cloud. "Go ahead," Street mumbled to the younger man. "Finish it." Mauricio put his foot against Street's shoulder and pushed him down where the waves broke on the beach. Street lay supine, his knees slightly drawn, slowly rocking left then right in obvious pain, exhaustion, and humiliation. I took Mauricio's elbow and said, "Listen, if you have to have the money, I'll pay you." He jerked his arm away and said, "Pinche mula!" Probably to Street, maybe me, maybe all three of us. He turned and quickly disappeared between the nearby buildings. Ralph and I helped Street out of the surf, but he would only let us get him to a sitting position before waving us off. "Thanks, fellas. I'll take it from here. I'm okay. Just give me a minute to redress my dignity." We saw there was no changing his mind, so we walked back to the Palapa. The couple from Holland sat on two bar stools. "Do you have Heineken?" the man asked. "Santeria by Sublime" played as I turned for a look at Street, whom I could barely see in the gloom of the setting sun. I thought I heard him shout something, but the sea and the wind tore it away. "Do you think we should go back and drag him up here?" I asked Ralph, and he said, "Probably a good idea." But when we returned to the spot, he was gone. We looked along the beach to the west and to the east, but he was gone, never to be seen again.